I'm Natasha Jansons, and welcome to Sense in the City, the podcast where we discuss a topic even more taboo than sex. This week I'm chatting with Emilia Rossi about her approach to investing in property. Not only is she a successful investor and designer, Emilia is also the founder of two award-winning businesses, her lifestyle and business blog, emiliarossi.com.au, and co-founder of online wedding marketplace, capriyes.com.au. For more information about Emilia and links to her businesses, be sure to check out our website, www.womenwithsense.com.au/podcasts. Welcome to the program, Emilia.
Thanks, Tash.
Now, you were recently in a few newspaper articles talking about not just your businesses, but your approach to investing. Mm-hmm. And in particular, the subject of rent vesting came up. Now, for those who are listening and are not familiar, rent vester is essentially someone who chooses not to buy their own home and have a mortgage, but instead they rent and invest in other ways. Now, in your particular case, you've chosen to invest in property. And I was quite interested in your approach, and thank you for coming on to share your story. But let's start off with Why property in particular? What attracted you to investing in property?
So I was very fortunate to have a ball-busting mum who at a very, very early age taught me how to leverage money and invest. Because she herself already had a couple of investment properties, it was only natural for her to kind of mentor me and help me try and get in the property market. And at that time, I thought, it'd be really cool to actually physically see what you've kind of invested in. So I chose to get into property because that was kind of what my mother was already involved in. I mean, if she was in shares, I'm sure I would have started with shares, but that's probably the main reason why I got into property.
Okay. How old were you when you bought your first property?
I think I was 25 or 26, which is quite interesting because back then that was quite young, but now looking back at it, I think that's actually quite old because I know that a lot of people now are starting like in their late teens, early 20s.
Yeah, they're getting in really early. And what made you decide to be a rent vester in particular and not buy your own place to start off with?
It's a really good question. And I find in the media that I haven't kind of portrayed reasons why this kind of works for particular people. So it's cool to kind of have an opportunity to really let you know why I'm doing this. So my lifestyle right now is about living in the city. So I live in Docklands. So it's not really in the CBD, but it's just outside of Melbourne CBD. And I love a view. I love living in a luxurious apartment. I love, having the convenience to walk everywhere. So I actually sold my car a year and a half ago because I don't use it. So because of this lifestyle, living in a luxury apartment, it's actually cheaper for me to rent than to own and pay the mortgage. Not only does it make it a financial, it's financially wise, I wouldn't necessarily live in my own apartment because the rents that you also get here in Docklands are phenomenal. They're very, very good, very, very strong. So because I live in that kind of lifestyle, for me, it makes sense to rent and then also invest. If I flip that around and I live in the suburbs, whether it's in Melbourne, Sydney or Canberra, I wouldn't necessarily rent and invest because I think it would be cheaper to pay down the mortgage in a place that I live and then continue to invest. So I think it really depends on your lifestyle and what's better suited to you.
And that's a really important point because too many people buy into this whole, and I know this is starting to change, but there was the old, thought of, rent money is dead money. And what people need to keep in mind is that rent money is not dead money. It depends on what you do with the money that you're saving. So if you're doing as you're doing and investing that difference, then that's fine and that's working well for you. But too many people fall into the trap of renting and then they're
not doing
spending
anything.
The rest of their money and they're not investing and they're not doing anything.
And exactly. And it's I think that's a very naive comment. It's obviously a comment from maybe individuals who are not necessarily financially savvy or educated in knowing how to leverage and how to utilize, your money. I keep using that word leverage because I just think it's such a powerful word. It's how can you use your current situation to even make, more money or grow your wealth. So I think that's a bit of a naive comment to say rent money is dead money. And exactly. I agree, it is changing.
Yeah, and I know a lot of business owners, and I found it fascinating that so many of them actually chose to rent rather than have a home that they bought and have a mortgage in. And it is all around that. It's what they can do with the surplus cash flow. It's about their lifestyle and the flexibility that they need as well. So again, if you're deciding which way to go, too many people again forget if they're having a sea change or they're going to move somewhere. Quite often they go, oh, well, I may as well, especially now that interest rates are so low, I may as well have a mortgage. It's the same kind of money and all those sorts of things. But they're forgetting about the costs of entering into the property market and exiting as well. So I'm talking about things like stamp duty, real estate agent fees, all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Now, while your repayments might be similar to your rent, if you're only going to end up living in that place for a year or two and then you're going to sell again, when you add on all those extra costs, it actually ends up making you worse off. So these are all things that are really important to keep in mind when deciding what to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I'm just wondering, so there's been so much talk. I mean, every day there's another article speculating around what's going to happen with the Australian property market. Is there going to be a bubble bursting, or it's just going to cool off and ease off and all those sorts of things? What are your thoughts? Are you scared off by what's happening? Would you invest at the moment, or are you holding off?
It's really interesting. It's a challenging market. So I was in Canberra before here. Canberra's very, very different at the moment to Melbourne. I'm reading what's happening in Sydney. I'm reading some, you know, top property investors in Sydney, and I'm so sorry I can't name one on top of my head, but there are two or three that I, you know, read in the news who, for the first time in a very long time, because of what's happening in the property market, they're actually offloading some of their property. So instead of holding their entire portfolio, they're actually offloading it so they can get a bit more cash flow. I think that is because of what's actually happened with the banks being a lot more restrictive in their interest-only lending criteria. So as an investor, for me personally, it is about cash flow. You used that word before, and about flexibility. So I actually have no desire at the moment to pay down any of my mortgages. So for me, I'm very high risk at the moment because I do have the time. I do have that time ahead of me. So I can be high risk, make a bit of mistakes now because I can make up for it at the end. So this thing about, you know, now not having interest only loan and having to be forced to pay interest and principal, it is a little bit daunting because obviously it's going to change my cash flow situation. So I'm going to be now spending, or, you know, a little bit more with my, you know, managing and holding my investment portfolio. So that's going to take a little bit of cash away from, you know, my other money generating activities, you know, in life. So that's probably the only thing that's happening at the moment. I've had to change my forecast. So the next 12 months, I've actually had to increase my buffer zone there because not only has it's now changing from interest to interest and principal, those interest rates are probably going to go up a little bit. So I've just got to make sure that my buffer zone is a little bit larger. So I'm not scared. It just means for the first time in a very, very long time, I've had to readjust my finances and take money off away from something else and put it back into my portfolio. In terms of, am I going to invest in something else? Yes, it's, you know, I don't think it's the same. The market is not the same around all of Australia. So for the first time, we're actually going to, and when I say we, it's my husband and I, let's go back to that word leverage. I'm now leveraging off the strengths of my husband. So for the next property that I personally want to get, I'm going to see how our situation, because we just got married last year. So the banks now see you as one entity instead of separate. If we've got the equity in that fourth property, and you know, at the end of this year or next year, I'm going to go and talk to my expert person and find out, all right, what's happening? Do we go and invest and buy another property, or do we take that and maybe put in some virtual currencies, or do we put that into some shares? So yes, I am going to be investing again.
Okay. And with the portfolio built up so far, has it mainly been off the back of rising property prices? So tapping into the equity that you've built and use as a deposit for the next one?
Yeah. So it's literally purchase the property, go and have it evaluated, extract that equity, take the equity, combine it with a little bit of savings that I have, and go and get the next one. So I've gone one from one. Now, I have to reiterate, I think this is really important. It is not about the quantity of your portfolio, it's the quality. So There is maybe one property there at the moment that's not performing well. I probably will keep that, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years, but look at that down the track as long term, because that was the first one and that was probably not a wise purchase. So I'm not here to keep buying property. For me, I just want to have an exceptional portfolio. And if that means down, you know, down the end, towards the end, sorry, I have to maybe sell off some and maybe readjust it and purchase a winner. That's what I'm going to do. So I have no intention of just keep buying. I just want to aim to get an extraordinary, well-performing portfolio overall.
And what's your plan long-term? Are you thinking you want to pay these off so that then you've got the passive income that's coming through from those properties, or do you plan on selling them eventually?
Great question. So the 3 out of 4 are having very, very strong rental returns. They're the kind of properties that I want to have, you know, when I'm retired down the track, pay off those, because those mortgages aren't high at all. Pay those off and just keep those as, you know, cash flowing properties. The long term is to diversify. So I need to reiterate, this is not my only kind of income stream. So besides having investment properties, all right, let's then look into shares. So that's another thing that I want to look at, you know, end of 2017 or 2018, is how can I actually start investing in shares. I'm a little bit late, you know, late started with that. It's something that I probably would have liked to have done in my 20s, but that's okay. It's never too late to start. You know, look at shares and also, you know, see how I can scale my businesses as well. So the long-term objective is to make sure I have multiple streams of income. Nowadays, with the lifestyle that people want, I think it's very, very hard to just have a full-time job and superannuation. You really, really need to understand how you can start growing and nurturing these other opportunities and channels in life.
Absolutely. Excellent point. And that really is, as you said, that's the key to getting ahead. So long as you're just tied up doing one activity, it's only you being able to generate X amount of money, you're extremely, extremely limited in what you can do. You know, unless you're someone like Oprah who's making massive salaries, the reality for most of us is the only way to get ahead is to look at having other ways of creating revenue. So I really love the approach that you have taken there. Tell me, how do you go about picking an investment property? Like, what sort of resources do you use? Do you do your own research? Do you hire experts? How do you go about it?
I'm going to be absolutely transparent. So the first three, I think was a lot of luck there. So the first three were kind of, there were apartments in low-rise buildings. Now, I would never, ever, ever recommend or suggest a first-time buyer to go and get an apartment in a complex with other apartments. Why? Because the land that you're buying is very, very small. Yes, you're going to have great rental returns from day one, but that's not the objective. Rental returns do not increase the value of the property and they do not allow you to have the equity to go and reinvest. I'm extremely fortunate that those first three, you know, almost doubled in value, all those three apartments. So I was able to draw equity, let's just say, from the first one that I purchased over a 10-year period more than once. The second one, you know, more than once. The third one, I just extracted equity probably a year ago to purchase the first one. The fourth one was a townhouse. So you just have to be really careful. Now, if that didn't happen, Tash, I would have been stuck. So if I had purchased that first two-bedroom apartment, which was in Canberra, and it was with other apartments in a small complex, yes, I would have a great rental, but if that didn't grow, I would have been stuck. There's no way I would have been able to get the second, third, and so forth. I would actually have to rely wholeheartedly on, you know, my savings, and that would have taken a long time. So I, you know, there was luck there. The fourth one, because the sole objective was to make sure that had, you know, the best possible chance of having a good capital growth. For the first time, I actually worked with a phenomenal person here in Melbourne CBD, a property expert. I wouldn't say he's a property, what do they call? Property
agents?
Yeah, I'm against those kind of people because I think that industry is unregulated. This gentleman here is an expert at his field. I only take advice from people, kind of practice what they preach. So he has an impressive portfolio. It's his own business. So I, you know, spoke to him over a 1-year period and relied on him to purchase this fourth property, which he purchased on my behalf in Brisbane. So time will tell if that was a successful move. And at the end of this year, I think that would be a year that we've had that property. So I will get that. I'll get the bank to go on and evaluate that and see if, you know, if there is any capital growth there in a year. I'm not sure, but you know, it was based on a lot of historic data, and you know, he was able to secure that. So moving forward, Tash, I will be engaging in someone like him. I don't think I'm going to do it on my own because those price points are going to get higher and higher, and I'm not confident, nor am I an expert to go and purchase maybe an $800,000 property. I need the advice and maybe mentorship of an expert to you know, start looking at those kind of price points.
Now, we've sort of touched a little bit on diversification and having multiple income streams. Now, I think you're a really great example of diversification because not only have you got multiple investment properties, you've also got several businesses as well. Now, I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you got started and how do you have the time to run two businesses at once?
I'm all about creating and crafting the most elegant solution and scaling things. So for me, you would be surprised. I do have still time to, you know, go to the gym, you know, do my kind of design work or relax. So that lifestyle to me is about having more time. It's not, you know, and some more money, but it's to have more time. So with the businesses, so one of them is an online wedding marketplace, and that's called Capries, and that empowers couples in Australia to list and sell pre-loved wedding items. So it's, think of it kind of like a classier Gumtree, but for the wedding industry. I overlook that. So at the moment, we've got a very strategic and very clear marketing plan for that. So we know exactly what we want to achieve in the next 3 to 6 months. So as long as you know exactly where you want to take that business and just work on, you know, those top activities that generate the most outcome or income, I think that's really, really important and keeps you focused. And the other one is my lifestyle and business blog. So I generate an income from that when people contact me to do collaborations or sponsored posts. That started as a hobby, kind of like my personal place online, to share my experiences. So on my blog, I share about the things I've done in my investment life, the mistakes I've done in business, talk a bit, you know, about with other people how they can, you know, make more money or leverage off the current situation. So those are the two businesses at the moment. And that's probably just a really top level overview of how I'm able to manage and run those and still have a life.
How did you first start out? Did you start your business on the side while working a full-time job, or how did you do it?
Yeah, good question. So this kind of journey started, so after I graduated in uni, this was back in Canberra, I actually had the opportunity to partner with a brand in South America, and I brought a high-end brand to Canberra called Carmen Steffens. It was myself and my mother, opened up a gorgeous little boutique in an e-commerce store from 2008 and 2011. So that first kind of stint in business really set the platform for being in business for myself. So after that, we relocated to Melbourne. We didn't want to, you know, the GFC hit. It was one of the most stressful times in my life, most challenging, of course, learned so much. Relocated to Melbourne because there was just no other opportunities for me in Canberra, and kind of started from the ground up here. So for me, it's all about reinventing myself. I never take no for an answer and I never stop. So because I already had that stint in business in Canberra, you kind of already have those skills to come into a new place and look at the market and think, okay, what else can I do? So when I was here, I was looking at other business opportunities while I was working on the side, because obviously I needed to generate an income. And you know, within 3 years, while working on the side, I started generating these business ideas until I landed two businesses, my blog and Capries, which are proven concepts. So those weren't kind of like the first business experience. My business experience started back in 2008 in Canberra.
Wow, quite a journey. And yeah. Just to wrap it up, I'd love to hear from you. What have been some of your biggest money lessons over the years, both good and bad?
Oh, good question. Money lessons. You know what? Money lessons is one of them would be my university degree. I think that was the dumbest business decision of my life. I wish that when I started uni the first day, instead of them trying to sell me something, I wish they could have been transparent and told me, if you sign the dotted line, you are going to be signing up to a $40,000 debt. Will you be making that money back? I'm not sure, but you're going to start life with a $40,000 debt. So I think the number one would be actually going to university. If I could do that again, would I do that? Maybe I'll do a shorter degree. Maybe I would have done a degree that I know would actually generate, you know, income straight away. I'm not sure. So number one would be my university degree. Number two would be the first business. So in 2008, my mother and myself actually forecasted the projected incomes of, you know, running a physical shop and an e-commerce store based on numbers prior to the GFC. So we didn't actually put a buffer there. Okay, if the traffic, let's say in the Canberra Centre, goes down, what would be the like what would our figures look like? So because we were basing our forecasts on such high positive numbers, when the GFC hit, it literally shrunk or minimized all our forecasts by 50%. And that, as you can imagine, really affected the entire operation of the business, from buying to marketing to, you know, even putting the recommended retail price on the product. So those will probably be the two biggest lessons, is make sure that you forecast for a lot of different situations, not just the good. You have to really, really do the bad as well.
Great, great point. That's it. We have a tendency to sometimes be a little bit too optimistic, and we like to look at, and especially Absolutely. If someone is selling us something, you know, they will focus on the positives and the great returns that you can get. But, and, you know, tying it back to, for example, investment properties, you know, it's great to have agents telling you, you know, this new development has all this promise in the world and here's what the rents will be, but make sure that you're doing your backup plan. So, well, what happens if it takes a little bit longer to rent it out? What happens if the rent isn't quite as high? Because, for example, I've also bought and sold investment properties, and some of them, you know, worked out great, and others, you know, you learned a few lessons. Like, for example, I'm never buying off the plan ever again.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
The times had changed, because we had gone off, you know, I saw my bosses and all these people making huge amounts of money. This was back in Canberra, back in those days as well, off the plan. You know, you'd basically sign a contract and 3 months later, you know, you've made an extra 10% or more. And so I was, again, similar age to you, you know, early 20s when I first started out. So in my mind, I was thinking, oh, well, this is just how it always works. You buy off the plan, you're guaranteed to make the money. The agent said, by the time it's finished, in 2 years' time, you've made your money back. And the other thing was, again, learning about if you're buying in a complex and if it is a new development, you have to think about this. So there's going to be however many, you know, in ours it was quite small, there were only 50 apartments, but there's complexes with 100 or 200 apartments. You have to think about them. What percentage of those, if most of them are as investment properties, they're all coming on the market at the same time. So you've got all these tenants, potential tenants going through, you're all competing against each other for the identical apartment space. Mm-hmm. So you know what? All those rents that they forecasted, you know, for us, they said, you know, it'd be $580 easy. Guess what? We rented it at $500 because you went, well, you got to just go quickly and just get someone in there. And there were people that were holding out for months and months trying to get that rent that they were promised, and they were just losing money over and over and over again. So as you said, making sure that you factor in what's the worst case scenario and how long do I have a buffer there to make sure that I can hold on to the investment during the hard times.
Oh, that's interesting. That's it's funny to also hear, you know, the lessons that you've learnt, and not struggles, but they are lessons. I wouldn't call them struggles.
No, it's the important part, because as you said, if everything always goes your way, that's not really where the lessons come from.
Exactly.
It's when things go a little bit haywire. Well, thank you so much, Amelia, for being on the program. It's been really great chatting to you, and thank you so much for sharing your stories and experiences.
Oh, cheers, Tash. Appreciate it.